This past week on my day off, I went to Lawrence to visit some friends of mine, and for lunch we went down to the Union at the University of Kansas. And, of course, I took my little protein shake because, of course, I'm on my diet, so I was not going to partake in lunch myself. But my friends went to get their food, and the first thing that became readily apparent was there was this huge cafeteria with all these little stations, and you could have just about anything you could imagine for lunch. Well, it took some time to decide, but finally my friends got their food, and we were in line to check out. When they get up there, and the cashier says, "Oh, you know, if you were to get the large drink instead of the small one, it'd be cheaper." Okay. So, like, all right. Yeah, because I can do this little deal thing, and we'll get it cheaper. Like, all right, fine. Oh, but then, if you were to do that, it'd only be like 15 cents more for you to add chips to that. And if you were then to get this other special, I could, like, throw in a stuffed animal with that, too. And I'm like, we just wanted to get lunch, and here we are. It's getting so complicated with all these decisions to be made. I think that's a little bit of what we see in society, too. We do have so many choices that even just getting lunch can be quite a decision to be made. In the midst of all these choices that we're faced with, it can be good, and we value our freedom, certainly, that we have these choices, but it can also be a little bit daunting. It's hard to make a choice, then. We have to say no to something and yes to something else. There's something about us in our freedom that has this idea. We don't want to commit. We want to keep all our options open. And we think that makes us more free, keeping our options open. But if you think about it, how many famous people in history can you name that you admire because they managed to go through life committed to nothing? They managed to survive life completely open to all options. Well, no, we consider that life wasted. Be like the person who went to the cafeteria and just admired all the choices, but then never ended up with lunch. Rather, we see that our freedom is not restricted by our commitments. Rather, it is precisely through the commitments that we make in life that defines who we are. Our readings today are centered on these two key issues: choices and commitment. In our first reading, the Israelites have just entered the Promised Land. They've learned to love God, but now they have a choice to make. They're in the land of the Canaanites and their other gods there. Will they still choose God? They have a choice. Maybe they're going to worship a little bit of the rain god on the side just to make sure that it rains. Or maybe they're going to be tempted. Maybe we should worship the fertility god just in case. Joshua rather stands up and says, "No, you all need to decide who you're going to serve today, the true God or these other gods. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Those words are famous in Scripture because Joshua stands up and he makes a commitment amongst all the choices, and he's remembered for that. All the other people are inspired by Joshua and they say, "Yes, we too will serve the Lord." That commitment that they made defined them as a people and gave them their identity. They were God's people. You know, our readings the past couple weeks have been focusing on the Eucharist, and so our second reading today might seem a little out of place. Here in the middle, we have this reading on marriage. Well, to make matters even worse, St. Paul uses that dreadful word, subordinate. Just the word subordinate kind of makes us feel like, ooh, someone's out to attack our freedom. I'm not subordinate to anybody. I want to be the one in control. What does he mean, be subordinate? And then, as if to heap gasoline on the fire, St. Paul says, "Wives, be subordinate to your husbands in all things." Or worse, that other translation, "Be submissive." Immediately, like, flags go up all over the place, and I think at this point, a lot of women are, like, ready to pick up stones and heave them at St. Paul. I think I saw a few husbands kind of get jabbed there. But we tend to miss, I think, the whole rest of the paragraph then, where he goes on to say, "Oh yeah, and by the way, husbands, you need to die for your wives. Love them that much. You should love your wives as you love your own body and give yourself up to death for her, just as Jesus did for his church." Now, that sounds like a pretty good challenge to men, too. Now we can perhaps deal with this passage by kind of laughing it off and saying, well, gosh, wasn't St. Paul so culturally conditioned in his time? And thank goodness we're beyond that now. But I think the strong reactions that people often have against this reading from Ephesians bring us back to the central point of this crisis of commitment that our society is in. We tend to hear the word subordinate and we think of someone controlling our freedom. But the word subordinate, it really comes from two words, sub, meaning under, and ordinate, order, or submissive, under a mission. So when St. Paul tells husbands and wives to be subordinate to each other out of reverence for Christ, he's saying, husbands and wives live a life that is ordered toward one another. They're under a common mission. The purpose and direction of the life of husband and wife is no longer two individual people, but is ordered, submissive, under a common mission. This choice, this commitment made in marriage to marry one person and not another, you know, does it close off certain options? Well, yeah, you have to say this one and not that one. But think back to your wedding day. How many of you were standing there at the altar feeling sad, thinking, oh, what a shame. I have to close off so many other options today. There's so many other people I could marry, and alas, that I have to pick. No. I think I saw husbands get jabbed again. Be careful there. You know, you chose your spouse. You wanted to be married to them. It was a time of great joy to make this commitment. You know, if you think about it, I see laughter, but remember, each of you chose your spouse because you wanted to. You know, I chose to marry God, and somehow I wound up living with Father Brian. I don't know. In all seriousness, no, if you think back to your dating years, for instance, if they're like mine, is this a time of peace and happiness while all our options are open? Well, if you're anything like me, it was a time of stress. You're like, okay, first of all, should I get married or should I not? And that's like a huge question. Am I called to be a priest or not? But then I decided I thought I was called to marriage. But then it's like, okay, is this the person? It's like really stressful because like, okay, you're really serious. Maybe I'm supposed to marry this person, but then it doesn't work out. And you feel sad. And there's this emotional roller coaster. I had anything but peace as I was trying to like discern a vocation. But then you make the commitment. Then you're in it. And all of a sudden, the day you get married, the day I got ordained, there's a great peace. Yes, other options were closed, but that's not what you're thinking about. All you see is the beautiful new freedom that opens up to you as you say, now life is ordered. Now I know where I'm going. My life is tied up in my vocation. And you have a new freedom. The gospel today. Jesus presents an important choice to his disciples. We have perhaps the saddest verse in all of Scripture as a result of this choice. Jesus tells us in St. John's Gospel, chapter 6, verse 66, that as a result of this, many of his disciples returned to their former way of life and no longer accompanied him. You can almost picture the apostles saying, Jesus, something is wrong. Do you see everybody's leaving? You need to like restate this or, you know, soften this up a little bit. But Jesus doesn't do that. He comes to the apostles with the same choice. He asks a commitment. And even though everybody else is leaving, Jesus asks the apostles, are you going to go too? He asks for their commitment. And he's willing to let everybody go. You got to ask yourself, what could be so important, so central, that Jesus is willing to sacrifice everything else he's done in his mission and have all his followers leave if they can't accept this one teaching? What could be so important? It's the Eucharist. That's what St. John has been telling us in this entire chapter. For the last 4 weeks, that's what we've been reading. Jesus says, eat my flesh, drink my blood. And the people murmur, like, that is strange. Who can accept that? You don't really mean that, Jesus. You mean, like, symbolically, right? You know, we believe in you, and symbolically that's like eating your body and blood. Jesus says, no. My flesh is true food, and my blood is true drink. And the people say, this is hard. Who can accept that? It makes no sense. Jesus, you need to rephrase that. You're going to lose people if you keep speaking crazy talk like that. Jesus doesn't back off at all. In fact, he strengthens his language and says, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. It couldn't be clearer. In fact, it's so clear that the people in the gospel today say, well, if that's it, then we can't do that. We're out of here. And he lets him go. He knows that the Eucharist is that important. It is to be the center sign of commitment and membership in his church. St. Paul uses that image of marriage in our second reading to speak of the love of Christ for his church and the love that we should have for Christ. It is a marriage. Every time we receive the Eucharist, we renew our marriage bond with Jesus. We renew the vows of marriage that we made to God in holy baptism. This is why we can never receive the Eucharist lightly. Jesus was willing to let everyone go, and we need to examine ourselves. This is why we can't come to the marriage banquet of Jesus if we have serious sin on our soul. Just as a husband and wife, if they have a fight, you got to reconcile first before you can join in union. If we've committed a serious sin, we have to go to confession. That's why we start Mass, by examining our conscience. This is the reason why, just like the challenge to the apostles today, we have to bet all on Jesus when we receive the Eucharist. Just as you can't get married to someone halfway. You can't say, I choose to marry you except for this and this. So we cannot receive the Eucharist and tell Jesus, I love you and I'm going to listen to what you say except for this and this. The Eucharist is the sign of our marriage covenant with Jesus, and he asks us to bet all on it, to commit everything. So today, in Holy Mass, we've talked a lot about images of the Eucharist, and perhaps one of the most beautiful ones is that the Eucharist is the marriage banquet of Jesus, when he claims us and we claim him to be our spouse. Christ now prepares the wedding feast before us, and with renewed commitment, we now joyfully enter into the marriage supper of the Lamb.